Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m. We also rebroadcast the program Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com. And we also archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. So we encourage you to check it out, the programs. We are linked to our guests. So that you are able to get all the information that you possibly can. And I think today will be no exception. You're going to want to check out our guest. You're going to want to check out her information. This is a period of time we're kind of focusing on animals in particular, but of a particular sort, you might say. We're going to be talking about Gracious Wild, a shamanic journey with hawks. And we're going to be talking with our guest, Stacy Couch. And I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's great to have you with us.
Yeah, I'm very happy to be here, Richard.
First of all, we've talked a number of times with people who claim to be shamans. And we don't always, I like to define terms, but we don't always get into it because the subject matter in general is so important, we want to dive right in. I want to start by defining what is a shaman?
It is, a shaman is a person who does spiritual healing and works on behalf of their community or behalf of a client to mend illness of a spiritual nature, so things in regards to the soul. We don't have much of a recourse for that anymore in our current day society. So shamans have been found at the root of every culture around the world on every continent. Anthropologists have done research on this. And so we all have a shaman somewhere in our genetic lineage. But yeah, the term has been originated right from Mongolia and has been applied globally to anyone who does this kind of work, but it's a earth-based practice that works with nature spirits and works within a generally agreed-upon landscape of the mystical world.
Okay, so in spite of the fact that the word itself comes from a particular part of the world, it's not exclusive to that. As a matter of fact, there are many tribes of different indigenous and even non-indigenous peoples around the globe who will take on the title or be given the title of a shaman. And I know that I would think that that's one word to describe, say, the role that a particular individual or individuals may play in a given community or tribe or what have you. Would it be appropriate to say, especially in the Native American traditions, medicine person, medicine man, medicine woman, that type of thing?
Yes, exactly. That would be exactly the term for it in those traditions, yes.
In our conversations, especially with one gentleman by the name of Peter Olmos, who is a Chumash Indian, we talked about our conversation what I referred to as, I wanted to talk about the magic, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that though we might use that word, the only reason that it would be considered something magical, if you will, is that we don't understand it. I mean, the outward appearance or outward manifestation is foreign to us, and so it's magic. Like if we were to go back in time and take a cell phone with us,
mm-hmm.
that kind
yeah,
of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think there's a number of the thing I love about shamanism is it's really a container to which, based on which culture somebody comes from or religious background they come from, they can fill that container. So yes, some people use the word magic, others use energy. That's becoming more and more common, at least in modern day cultures. But also grace or power would be other words to explain this thing, this power, grace, energy that moves and has an effect on our world, but we don't always see it or sense it.
Well, I'm quite intrigued by what we are going to be talking about today. I think it's also important as well, because what I think we're finding, and I keep hearing snippets of little news stories around the globe of different things that are happening. And I think about the conversations that we've had on this program about reconnecting with nature. And that's really the best way to put it, reconnecting, because we have been disconnected from the natural world, especially in our urban villages, if you will. If we did reconnect, then a lot of these little snippets that I'm hearing, I wouldn't be hearing. A matter of fact, I was sharing just the other day with someone, and on this program even, that I don't need to listen to the news. Man has been abominable to himself and his brothers and sisters since Cain and Abel. So why do I need to reinforce that by hearing the same stories over and over again, year after year, decade after decade? It's the same stuff, you know. I'd like to focus my attentions on something different, something that is going to make a difference to, I don't know, maybe change this. Do you believe, do you see that what you are doing as a shaman is in that light?
Yeah, definitely. I'm very much into the idea that spreading hope and love and, yeah, and a connection with the natural world is very important. We have this, I really think it's more a lifting of the veil. We've really cast a spell on ourselves or come under an illusion that we are disconnected from nature because we've come into the power to be able to create all of these artificial things around us, these cities and our vehicles and our homes. But in actuality, we've been connected with nature the whole time. We've just been under the illusion that we can be separate from it, which is actually not the truth, because we have to breathe oxygen produced by trees, and we have to drink water that comes from the land. So our survival is absolutely dependent on nature. It's just how much do we know or realize, or are we in awareness of that, or how much do we shut ourselves off or close ourselves off to it? So I think, yeah, a spiritual practice definitely begins in a practice of coming into hopefulness or into love or an open-hearted place, positive space, is very much about coming into awareness. So if we can just open our eyes and pay attention to what's going on in the natural world around us and those connections that already do exist, I think that really does bring a lot of hope into people's lives and does make a difference.
Why a shaman?
That's a good question. I chose that route basically because it resonated with me in all aspects. Really, I have always loved animals and have always wanted to be connected with the outdoors and always wanted to be spending time outdoors and contemplating nature. And so shamanism was a perfect fit for me because how earth-based it is. It works with power animals, or what some people may know as spirit animals. So they are my guides rather than angels, or not that I don't work with other types of guides, but power animals really primarily figure in the work that I do. And the other piece of it, too, is works with the imagination. I am very fascinated with the imagination and always have been. I've had a very, very active dream life, and obviously am a writer, so there's creativity and imagination involved in that. And when I learned about shamanic journeys and the shamanic journey trance and going into this altered state of consciousness and traveling into other realms via the imagination, which is a sacred or a holy power, I was absolutely captivated because it gave me an opportunity to do what I was experiencing at night in my dreams, to do it at will. And I had been desiring that, and I didn't even know, because I didn't even know it was possible till I found out about it. So, yeah.
So talk to me about this journey. Gratitude Wild, a shamanic journey with hawks. Now, let's talk about this from that context. What kind of a journey? I mean, obviously, you've kind of alluded to it already. But how did you become aware of this?
Of shamanism?
The shamanistic journey.
Mm-hmm. I was really fortunate. I actually knew hints of it from a very early age because of different books I had read. I had learned about shaman or medicine men in books, and my mom studied alternative healing and alternative spiritual paths when I was younger and shared with me about that. So I read Jamie Sams and David Carson's medicine cards and practiced with those from a very early age. So I was familiar with the idea, but I didn't know that anybody beyond someone who is still part of an indigenous tribe and part of a lineage, that anybody beyond that was practicing shamanism. So I didn't follow it as a path until I had the opportunity to meet someone who was doing it as a vocation. And then I learned about the Society for Shamanic Practitioners and the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, which are all about neo or modern day shamanism and teaching that it doesn't have to be from a particular lineage and just sharing it with whomever feels called to the work. So that was really the big shift for me, is learning that there is such thing as a modern day shamanic practitioner and that it was an avenue that was possible for me.
When I first read certified shamanic practitioner, I'm thinking there's a college course somewhere, you know, but I mean, more unusual things have happened within the educational institutions around the country. I mean, I was really amazed at the fact that it wasn't that long ago that metaphysics was being taught. And there's a great a comedian by the name of Woody Allen who tells a great joke that he was actually thrown out of his metaphysics class because he was caught cheating. He was looking into the soul of the student next to him. but this is very interesting in terms of something that we're not all drawn to. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you talk about reconnecting with nature, and not just, though that's something we're going to focus on, the animal kingdom, not just the animal kingdom, because there's more to nature than just the animals that are out there.
Yep.
Talk to us about the various levels of connecting to the natural world.
Well, I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with the term Mother Earth, and some people, to varying degrees, may be comfortable and use that on a regular basis, and other people may see it as more of kind of an esoteric type of term. But the Earth itself does have an energy field, and the Earth itself is a living organism. There's a whole theory, the Gaia principle, around that idea, because everything is interconnected. So when we look at the natural world, it is a reminder for us. And I studied ecology when I was in college because I love the way everything is interconnected. And that's another big piece of shamanism, is that understanding of the whole interconnected web of life, and mending and tending those connections is really a big part of the shamanic path. So obviously we've got plants as well, and the minerals, and there are people that work with, and in the shamanic field, that work with some like minerals specifically, some work with plants specifically, and some work with animals specifically. I invite all of those in. There's also the elements as well, right? And we find that practices around the elements and teachings around the elements in Chinese medicine and other practices as well. So, yeah, all of those things come into play when we're looking at the natural world.
I think one of the biggest struggles for some of us, myself included, is we want things to change. We want there to be a beneficial and thriving life for all, not just a select few, not 50%, not 75%, but 100%. And we want it now. And it doesn't work that way in spite of those desires to wanting it now. And we're doing everything we can to sort of make it happen. In the natural world, from the human perspective, things just kind of plod along.
Yeah.
Unless there's some kind of a natural, I'm going to use the human term, natural disaster, mm-hmm. that moves things forward pretty quickly. Fires, earthquakes, storms of varying types, and so forth. And otherwise, it's a so to speak, a long, drawn-out process. And the natural world has no problem with that. It just is. What are some of the things that you have learned in your practice as a shamanic practitioner to both help yourself and also teach others to become part of the process?
Yeah, and learn patience, right?
Yeah, I want it now.
Yeah, I want it now. Yeah, that is so part of our culture these days, too, just that immediacy, that need to fill, that need to satiate ourselves as quickly as possible, especially when we can go online and just click a couple buttons and have whatever we want shipped to our house or brought, even driven over to our house right away. We're, yeah, so getting into that mindset. And it does, it just to, even to plant a garden, and have to wait for 3-4 months for those tomatoes, that'll teach you patience. But when you get there and you get the chance to taste those tomatoes, that makes all the difference. And that's really a big part of it, is being able to watch and listen. So watch the natural world through the seasons and see how things change, how one particular tree in your yard or how one particular patch of your garden changes over the course of time. And notice that pair of robins that comes back every year or those ravens that are flying around overhead on a regular basis. Those are the same animals. We often think of them as like a train passing by the station, but they're actually individuals and they're living their lives right alongside ours. And that's really one of the big messages of my book, is that the animals are speaking to us all of the time, and it's time for us to start listening. And that was one of the really big callings that I heard, was to try and help people however I can, in whatever way works for them, to start to understand and listen to the animals and come into contact with them and the natural world as well. So that's a really a big piece of it, is just to start. We do so much talking. We do so much talking. When our mouths are silent and we're listening to someone, we're thinking in our heads what we're going to say next. Mm. And when we're out in nature, all of that has the opportunity to fall away if we stay with it long enough and if we're willing to be vulnerable enough. It's scary. We're so used to having our head filled with things that when we allow that to empty out and into the earth, or allow the wind to carry our thoughts away, it leaves us feeling exposed for a time and can be a little frightening. But that's part of the awakening and part of the process, and that's what helps create change, I think.
You have, of course, the book that the main focus of our program, Gracious Wild, having to do with the shamanic journey with hawks. I want to get into talking specifically about the various animals. I have myself been rather observant in the last 20 or 30 years as to various creatures that cross my path. Now, I'm not the type of person who gets all freaked out if a black cat crosses my path, because I've owned black cats before and I've had no problems, you know.
Yep.
Nor have I had any problems when walking under ladders, but that's a whole nother story. But in terms of these, I see them, the term that I am most familiar with in this context is omens. That this animal, there's a particular meaning. There's a reason why this animal crossed my path, to bring me a particular message. But unless I know the backstory about this animal, how am I going to figure out what the message is? Can you talk to that?
Yes. When you speak of the backstory, there's so many ways we can go, which is what I love about this work. So, yeah, looking at the animal itself as a symbol or an omen and deciphering the metaphor. Some people might be familiar with the idea of dream interpretation. So you have a dream and you're driving a car in that dream, and you might look up what a car means in your dreams in a book or online and find that it means motivation and your motivation to go somewhere. And animals can be seen, their messages that they're bringing us can be seen in the same way. They can be the message themselves. We can look at the story, the backstory for the animals can be mythology. So we can look at what gods or goddesses traveled with that animal. So very common, most people know that owls travel, or that Athena had a particular owl that she traveled with. There was also the goddess Artemis, who had both a stag and a wild boar as some of her counterparts, and also a pack of hunting dogs. So, yeah, when you find a particular animal or come across, have one cross your path, to do some research on mythology. And it doesn't have to be just Greek mythology. It can be from any tradition. There's Native American legends about animals here in North America, and there's legends, Hindu legends and fables about animals over in that part of the world. So mythology is a good place to start. Another place to look is into their biology. That's the great backstory that I absolutely love. So we can look at, how do they raise young? Do they have single pairs where they mate for life, or do they have herds or harems like a herd of elk does? And we can dig into all of that. What do they eat? When do they sleep? When are they active? So an animal like an owl that is really active at night is going and can see in the dark is going to teach us a lot about going into the mystery and being comfortable with the unknown. Whereas an animal like a hawk that's active during the day and has incredibly good daytime vision is going to teach us about consciousness and staying aware and awake during our days, and how to really get a broad view on our lives and focus in on things when we see what we need.
One of the things that has always intrigued me about this is where the stories come from, how they were created in the first place, and the origins, I guess is a better way to put it, the origins of these stories, the mythology.
Yeah.
And, of course, this also ties quite well into a series that we did in 2014, a 12-part series that we did, myself and my co-host at that time, Will Lynn, on Mythosophia, Exploring the Depths of Myth and Wisdom. It's one program of many. I mean, we could go into mythology until the day we die.
Yeah.
And never cover it all. But that was one area we really didn't delve into, and that was having to do with the mythology of animals, you know, in the various cultures. I mean, and again, you know, you could focus on one culture for 10 years and still not cover it all. But the origins of some of the stories are quite interesting. But you also make a differentiation between animal messengers and animal spirits, or guides, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to that?
Yeah, animal messengers, I would say, are incarnate animals, so animals that are alive and going about their day and having their lives. They just happen to cross our paths at a specific moment. And I believe that those moments, those meetings, are choreographed by our animal spirit guides. So say we have a hawk cross our path. My belief is that, and from my experience, it's that a hawk spirit guide on the other side has helped choreograph that meeting at a particular moment in your day or a particular moment in our lives that helps pinpoint what the message is about. So the animal spirit guides, or power animals, another term for it, they are guardian angels. They act very much like guardian angels. They help guide us along on our paths. They look after us and protect us. And they can be with us for our entire lives or for a short period of time just to help us through a specific situation. There are some belief systems that talk about that we have just one power animal for our whole life, but that has not been my experience at all. My experience has been that people have many, including myself. So.
What about pets that we have in our lives? I mean, I never really had a lot of pets when I was growing up. It wasn't something that our parents cared to have for whatever reasons. But that yet we still did. We actually, there was a dog for a very short time. It's more like we were looking after it until we found the right home, I guess. We had a cat. It was a calico cat, and that was its name.
Calico cat.
And we called it Calico, and resided in a chair in the living room and left its fur there and all of that. But now, since I've moved to Santa Barbara, we live in a rural area where we had chickens. We don't have them anymore, but we did for a few years. Right now, we have 7 cats. We have 3 shepherds of 3 different breeds, if you will, a white shepherd, a black shepherd, and then a purebred. And it's fascinating to not just only watch, but even to participate in the activities of these dogs. And when I say that, I speak of our interaction with them as they just roam around the yard or roam around the house inside, that kind of thing. The dynamics, trying to pick up on the clues. What is it that they're trying to tell us? Why are they behaving in a particular way, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then you start taking a look at the animals that come around the property in the wild. We've had a bear.
Wow.
And we've had, I'm sure there have been some bobcats. We've seen evidence of coyotes and so on and so forth. I mean, and we've had bats. Well, there used to be a bat refuge, a little box that was up on a pole. I've got to relocate it to bring them back. But there was even a male deer, a buck, that bolted across the hillside behind the fenced area where we lived, what we call our backyard. Uh-huh. It's just a fenced-in area on one end of the house. And, and again, on and on. I mean, this is just a small listing. I've had a fox dart across the highway. It's not a freeway per se, but it's an interstate that goes through the hills, through the mountain here in Santa Barbara, and so forth. And I'm going, okay, I saw it. What does that mean?
What now?
Now, what am I supposed to do with that? Because he didn't dart across. Thank God I didn't hit him. But he didn't dart across at that instant. For no reason at all. And so when I talk about omens, it's like, okay, well, where do I find out this kind of information?
Well, and I think it's wonderful that you share so many of just even snippets of different encounters with animals, because any single one of those in and of itself is, okay, that was a coincidence. That's the animal just going about their day or whatever. But we start to see, and that's really what pulled me into all of this work. I was a scientist and pulled me out of the scientific and logical mind and into the non-rational and intuitive mind, because I started to see patterns. It's interesting. I was seeing patterns, which is more of a rational mind thing, but that I couldn't explain the patterns with logic. I was having encounters and seeing animals of similar species at given points in time that were of significance to me, either when I was having a certain thought, or it was a particular date or anniversary, or after a particular dream I'd had. And all of these things started to thread together and weave together. And that was where it was like, okay, yes, this isn't a mere coincidence. There's something else going on. There's something bigger. And that's what I love about each of those individual encounters, is they start to weave a larger story. And our pets are great at opening the window for us into the natural world, because they don't use words. Their mind isn't filled with thoughts and logic all day long. They are just going about their day in a completely different way, and their senses work different than ours are. They have heightened eyesight, cats do, and dogs have heightened sense of smell. So we get this whole opportunity to learn something different from them.
Well, I do have to say that one of our dogs, he's a year, he's two and a half, well, he's two and a few months, big black King Shepherd, his name is Angus. I have never experienced a dog who talks so much. Do I understand everything he says? No. And a lot of times when we come home, he just goes on and on and on. And all we've basically concluded that he's just telling us all about his day.
That's great.
That's all we can figure, is that he's just telling us about his day. And I'm thinking, wow, that much happened in your day. What the heck have you been doing?
He must have an active imagination, right?
Yes. But one of the attributes of animals in particular, even from the standpoint of pets, is the fact that they do not perceive time. It's like,
I think the passage of time is different for them.
Yeah. I remember one of my dogs years ago, his name was Alfie. And I would go out the gate and leave for work. I would forget something. I would go back through the gate, And he was jumping around like I was coming home after work. I'd been gone for 8 hours or more. So that was kind of...
dogs are great at that.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, then the cats, they want your attention as well. And all our cats, of course, where we live are indoor. But I think... And we've had birds. We've had lovebirds. What else have we had? We had a blue-tongued skank. I call it a snake with legs.
Yep.
And the tongue was blue. Tortoise, and so forth. And so it's been very interesting, the types of animals that have been part of our lives. But not everybody has that. This is where, you know, where you're coming from, in that not everybody has that in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, not everybody wants that in their lives. They don't want to have animals running around their house.
Yeah, they're a lot of work.
They certainly are. But at the same time, I think one of the things that we might want to take a look at is the fact that, okay, so we're not advocating that you take on a bunch of pets, but somehow we need to find ways of bringing this element into our lives, the natural world, as it were, right?
Yeah. Yep. Well, and so many people, even people that don't have pets or aren't necessarily big animal lovers, so many people are drawn to the wildlands, right? So that's why we have a national park system. And people, I love that people give up their vacation, their free time, to go be out in nature, even if it's just for a drive or if it's for camping or skiing or being out on the lake and fishing. There's so many types of outdoor recreation that people get involved in. There's obviously a draw to be outdoors. There's something liberating about not having walls around us, not having any obligations for the day, and that whole sense of time slides away, right? In the natural world, we do have cycles. Time seems to go more in a circle rather than a line like we think of it. You know, the past is behind us, the future is ahead, we're here, and everything's linear. The natural world, everything goes in a cycle. So when we go out to sit on a beach for the afternoon, we can lose track of that linear time and just fall into the cycle, which is comforting because that's more familiar for us, actually, than the world we live in today. This is actually a foreign land or foreign culture that we are in because everything's changing so fast. And it is so, we are so plugged in and have so much stimulus around us all the time. And it's actually the natural world is, we've spent way more time outside in the history of humanity than we have in the current environment we have set up for ourselves. So.
True, yeah. Now, for those who are not predisposed to having their own pets, It's either not logistically possible where they live, or even if it is, it's just not in them.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah, I acknowledge that. I have two horses, and only one of them I can do a light ride on her because they're both older, senior horses. And I spend a lot of time taking care of them, and it's basically just being in service to them is my job. And so, yeah, not a lot of people have time for that or have a passion for that, and I can absolutely understand.
But for those who don't have a passion for it, that does not preclude the necessity, and I'm going to put it in that context.
Yeah, I agree.
To be reconnecting with the natural world, even if it may be through the awareness of animal messengers, or I'd like to discuss a little bit in our next segment about spirit animals. Can they, and I'm just curious before we go to break, can one begin that reconnection through those types of encounters, be they animal messengers or spirit animals?
Yes, most definitely.
Okay. Well, let's talk more about that when we come back. I'm Richard Dugan, and we are talking with Stacy Couch, and she is the author of, I think, actually a couple of books here. One of them we're going to take a look at. What is my spirit animal? How to find and understand your animal guides. Excuse me. And she is also the author of Gracious Wild, A Shamanistic Journey with Hawks. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we'll be right back.
Tell me your
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host on the Peabody Award-nominated program that we're talking today with Stacy Couch. She's the author of a couple of works here. One of them actually is free on the website. The other is one you're going to want to pick up through Amazon or even through her website. The book that's for purchase is Gracious Wild, a shamanistic journey with hawks. Stacy L.L. Couch, and we also have another book here that you can download from her website. It's called What is My Spirit Animal? How to Find and Understand Your Animal Guides. And I think that maybe that's a good place for us to start, because, again, as we started out with the program, really encouraging people to reconnect with nature. But we're not all capable of doing it. Someone may be listening, living in the middle of New York City.
Yeah.
And yeah, I know Central Park is there, but you don't live near it, and it's not a place that you're likely to go near. Or some people just don't like the outdoors for whatever reason, yet they want to open up. They want to awaken that part of themselves that wants to be a part of this transformational cycle that we are going through. And one of those ways is through a spirit, an animal messenger or a spirit animal. And a spirit animal is a guardian angel that watches over you, protects you, and acts as your guide. And so, and again, you have animal messengers and spirit animals, and you've given us a good definition of the former as well as the latter. How do I go about figuring out if I have any spirit animals that are around me, I guess is the best way to put it. do I need to go someplace? Do I need to seek someone out like yourself? Do I need to perform some ritual or be a part of some ceremony? What's the process for, first of all, finding out what the animals are and how they're going to, listen to them or hear them, and even if it's possible, I guess, communicate with them? What's the process?
Well, you've already explained a couple routes, so people can definitely connect in with a shamanic practitioner and have the shamanic practitioner, such as myself, do a power animal retrieval for them. So bring back or bring to them a power animal that will help them at this time in their life. Also, on a shamanic journey, a lot of people's current power animals show up, so we'll know who's already been with you at this time. And so that's a more formal way, and one that a lot of people might be familiar with. But there's a lot of other ways, too. I'm really flexible in this. I don't have a rigid structure or superstitious feelings about how we get our power animals and that one way is more strong than another. I feel like it's really up to the individual and however they get that information. So if they have always had a really strong affinity for horses or maybe jaguars or polar bears, if they have had a strong affiliation for, or like very strong pull or fascination with a certain animal, that is one of their power animals or spirit animals, because they wouldn't be thinking about it if they didn't resonate with it. They wouldn't be drawn to it. We aren't drawn to animals unless we have a strong association or resonance with them. And another way is that they just start showing up. And so how do you do that with something like an elephant, right? When you live in North America and elephants are native to Africa, how could you have an elephant power animal? Well, you might have an elephant show up in a dream or a series of dreams. You might have then the encounter of, out of nowhere, somebody bringing up elephants in a conversation the next day. And then that evening, as you're mindlessly flipping through TV, seeing a whole show about elephants you didn't expect to come across. So there's all of those kind of accidental encounters with images of that power animal that would make it one that's in your life right now and helping out and inviting you to explore what gifts they have and they're bringing for you. There's also the opportunity to, like I mentioned, dreams are a big one. And some people do have waking visions. They are able to, during their day, see things in their mind's eye, have spontaneous visions. And if they trust that and they feel like that is a valid thing that's happening and that's not something they're making up, that also can be their spirit animal as well. I think that's part of the trouble with coming into communion with our spirit animal is wondering if we're making it up. And I think that is a wonderful test for our intuition, because we think the same thing about our intuitive hunches or intuitive thoughts. We think, am I making that up? And so if we start to learn, maybe via a relationship with a spirit animal, what we're making up or what is really true for us and what really resonates and is real for us. And I don't mean real in what we can feel with the five senses. I mean real in that what resonates deep within us and really has meaning for us.
Well, I think it's quite extraordinary to find them. We're always, as much as we are always looking for, what's the word I want? We're always looking for guidance. We're always turning to someone else to give us that information. And I've sought it out myself, but I've also put it in a little different context. It is more, I'm just seeking confirmation of what I already know. They're not giving me anything new.
Yeah.
And that keeps them off the hot seat and it keeps it my responsibility.
I like to see it as, too, working with somebody else is having them turn the stone over and look at the other side.
Yeah.
Maybe show us a viewpoint that we hadn't seen before. Mm-hmm. But is they're looking at the same thing we've been looking at the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when we seek this out, for example, I can think of all different kinds of animals, but nothing pops out in my mind specifically as to what animal that would be for me. What kind of, can we maybe get a little bit more specific? What kind of processes would you and or I have to go through in order for me to find my spirit animal or animals? And I would assume that there's the potential for having more than just one.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely hitting on one of the big first hurdles, is that we think that we need to figure out what the one animal is, and that puts a lot of pressure on the situation because, oh no, then comes the next thing. What if it's one I don't like? Or what if it's embarrassing? Or what if it's silly? Or what if it's not very powerful, right? So that's everything that comes next. So if it's all focused in on one, then we start to get worried about how it's going to affect our ego. The ego comes into that situation. So in the free ebook that you were talking about, I go through a few of the myths around power animals. And one of them is we seem to think that some power animals are more powerful than the others. So like I was talking about elephants, and a lot of people are probably thinking, wow, that would be cool to have an elephant or a jaguar or a dolphin as my power animal. I'd love that. They're so awesome. But what about a mouse? One of my very first power animals that I worked with, actually the first shamanic journey I went on my own, the only animal I encountered was a mouse. And a lot of people don't like mice, and mice don't seem very powerful, right? There's a lot of creatures, predators out there in the world that will eat mice. So that could be a bad omen, but actually it was a great teaching, and I really have a lot of respect for the medicine of mouse because they absolutely are able to see God and the sacred in the details. So there's no animal is greater than another. They each have their own unique signature that they bring and their own unique gifts and talents that they bring to teach us about how to live more fully in the world. So that would be the first piece is, nope, we don't have to worry about finding just one. Let's just pick one. You know, let's just find one. Start with one. It doesn't have to be the only one. It's just the one we're starting with. And then the other piece would be, let's not worry about how cool or powerful or beautiful it is. Let's just see and explore whatever comes to mind or whatever shows up. So you mentioned the bear, you mentioned the deer, those would be two, and the fox, those would be three right there that we could explore. And then it would just be up to you to use your gut sense of which one you want to explore first, and I wouldn't stop with one by any stretch. I'm And I'm so much into direct revelation. It's really important for me that people, like you mentioned, be able to explore these things on their own and not have to rely on somebody else. I basically just see my role as giving examples. So when I give interpretations of animals for people, I'm doing that as a, I call it a sacrifice at their altar of learning, because it may or may not resonate with you or whoever I'm working with. And if it doesn't, then you know what doesn't, and you can go for what does. And so I'm just, I just offer up possibilities to get the creative juices flowing. It's just like brainstorming, right? When mm-hmm. we do that, we try to not filter what comes out, and we just start to throw ideas out there. And then once you have all the ideas about it out there, so all the ideas about what power, what might be a power animal you want to explore, maybe get a list, then just go with your gut. Or you could put them on sheets of paper and draw one out of a hat. That's another way to do it, too. And then just start with that one. Start somewhere.
Well, and that's the key right there. I guess the other aspect of it, too, is the interpretation. And certainly you offer your suggestions, but each individual really can only define it for themselves, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's, and each animal, even though they have very specific, like when we think of wolf, we think of predator. There's very strong associations with each animal, but there's a myriad of them. There's a whole list of associations. When we think of wolf, we also think of caretaker. We think of community. We think of that they're a keystone predator, so that the whole ecosystem relies on that wolf to look after the health of the whole entire ecosystem. So there's so many different variations on a theme, and it's which one pulls us or which handful of them speaks to us at this moment. And it may not be every piece of that animal's symbology that speaks to you right now. It may be one piece really strongly, and that's perfect, because then that means we're really honing in on what the message is for us. And that's why, yeah, I like to teach people how to start to do their own interpretations and pick and choose pieces of the biology, or if they have a book like Animal Speak by Ted Andrews or the Medicine Cards, like I mentioned earlier, if they have those books, to read them, but pick out what fits for them and not try to make something else fit that doesn't, because it's really, yeah, important that we learn how to do this ourselves.
Yeah, it is something that, again, regardless of the fact that you know, we're here to help to support one another and encourage in our various paths if we can, but it is still ultimately up to us to come to the respective conclusions that we do come to. And again, that then gives us a little bit more definition of origins. They're ours, if you will. But in a manner of speaking, they are not ours, but they've come through us. And I have a feeling that an individual is going to have a little bit more trust of that source coming through themselves. And again, that's if they're well grounded and they're well anchored in their own individuality, than getting it from somebody else who may or may not have a hidden agenda. I honestly don't know what kind of a hidden agenda you could have for steering someone to a particular spirit animal or animal messenger per se. Or,
well, we
definition.
All have our own filters, though, right?
Yeah,
we all
exactly.
have our own filters, and we have first impressions of people when we meet them, or we see someone differently than they see themselves. So, yeah, there's that. That definitely comes into the mix for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love how you speak about origins as well, because that opens up a whole another avenue of the collective unconscious and that concept, which is fascinating.
Well, we have coming up programs where we're actually going to be diving into a particular area, a rather large one, talking about the Akashic Records and what that means in the context of trying to be a part of the process of guiding our societies, our civilization into a better place, again, where we all get to thrive. We all get the opportunity to be a part of what's going on. And I'm hoping that the class system dissolves It's like, why shouldn't we all have the opportunity to experience some of the things that only a select few get to now? It just seems like, wow, it would be so cool for everybody to have that experience, you know?
Right.
So when it comes to these types of things, you know, seek out someone like Stacy. We're talking with Stacy Couch, and she is the author of Gracious Wild, A Shamanic Journey with Hawks. We're also talking about another book that she has put out that is actually available on her website. And that website, if I am not mistaken here, is graciouswild.com. Is that correct?
It's actually Wild Gratitude.
No. Okay.
Yeah, I made
backwards.
The two very similar.
Wild yep. Gratitude.
Wildgratitude.com.
Wildgratitude.com. You can yep. go there. You can actually download a free copy of the little book on your spirit animals. Getting some guidance and suggestions and so forth. And I think that would behoove everyone to check these things out. There are times when I would love to just spend time sitting in a chair, looking out from the screened porch that we have to the North Valley where we live, which is the wilderness. It's the Los Padres National Forest.
Beautiful.
And just watch whatever happens. We've actually seen hawks flying over the property. We've had flocks of crows. Actually, I don't think it's a flock. I think that's
murder.
The one that's the weird one. It's called the murder.
It's a murder. Yep.
I want to once again. What's the origin of that?
Yeah, interesting. Huh?
We won't go there, but still, very very interesting. But we've seen some rather extraordinary things out there. And then, of course, at night, because we're so far away from the city, you know, the stars in the sky are just spectacular. And I often say it's kind of like somebody just threw a bunch of glitter up in the air. It's really quite spectacular. And then, of course, even the night animals, the bats that start flying around, very beneficial in that regard as well. So I think that you do yourself a favor by going to wildgratitude.com, checking out Gracious Wild, A Shamanic Journey with Hawks. Stacy Couch, my guest. It's a quest into the wild and important spirit messengers, messages, and soulful gifts gathered from animals while they're in this wonderful place called Gracious Wild. And I was talking with someone the other day about the nature of the wild kingdom, as it were. And I said, and I would like for you to address this, because I was corrected in my observation, which is fine. And that was that when we see these wild kingdom programs, or whatever you want to call them, that like on National Geographic, where they're filming the predator prey experiences, say on the on the African plain, for example, right?
Yep.
And we call it predator prey, but for them it's just life.
Yeah. Yep.
And someone said to me that, well, that is not the way it was in the beginning. You didn't have lions chasing down and killing caribou. I don't know were they not meat eaters then? How did they survive if that wasn't the state? So I'm wondering if, from your perspective, your observations, your insights, intuition, was the animal world a much, I use this term loosely, tamer?
Or utopic?
Well, all right, we can use that
or
term.
Egalitarian, maybe.
Oh, all right, very good.
Yeah.
Life, and until, because this person said it wasn't until man came along and the animals basically learned from man how to be brutal to one another in that respect. And I thought this was, they were just, you know, getting something to eat.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually have to side with you on this one, Richard, because I'm an ecologist. I'm a biologist. That's part of who I am. And I've spent a lot of time sitting out watching birds, studying seabirds that are fishing, studying songbirds that are catching insects. I've seen all sorts of quote-unquote predation. And I don't see predation as a malicious or brutal act. I see it as just a simple cycle of life. And if we think about just ecology in general, there has to be some way for that energy and that form to pass on and be born in a new form. So we could look at this in a very spiritual sense of the form of deer. That deer eventually becomes ill, and then they fall down and die and give in to the earth. You have to have something that turns that form of deer into something else and then brings it back as new life. So I actually see the deer being born anew in the mountain lion, or the zebra being born anew in the lion, in the African lion. There's something there that is quintessential about our experience on this planet, about the cycle of life, about death and renewal and transformation, that speaks to us too on a very deep soul level. And then that there's, it's so beautiful. And I love that too, the idea that that you were talking about, that they don't see it as being predators or prey, because there's a lot of animals across the whole wild kingdom that are both predator and prey. A hawk, we think of them as predators, but I will tell you that they demonstrate prey behavior when their life is threatened, that they feel adrenaline, that they feel fear, and they will run from a threat. So they know what it feels like to be both prey and predator. They embody both, and they don't think, wow, I'm a prey animal right now, and I'm weak, or wow, I'm a predator, I'm strong, or I'm brutal. They don't have any judgment about it. They just respond in the moment to whatever's needed to further either their life or help further the process of the whole cycle of life. So that'd be more my opinion.
Well, it is, you know, it's going on. I mean, it's happening, and there isn't a whole lot you can do to stop it, because this is the process that is in existence today.
Yes.
So whether or not it is a natural process or not, or whatever, however you want to describe it, you know, it is what it is. And
I think sometimes, too, we can attribute a lot. We can attribute too much responsibility to ourselves. There is a lot that goes on without our help in the natural world. And I think that's one of the really great gifts we get by coming back into connection with the natural world is humility, because we're not going to stop that tornado. We're not stopping that tsunami. They're coming. And so there's a humility and a humbleness there that nature provides, which I think is necessary just to remind us that there is much more to life than our simple existence.
Mm. Well, I know that there's an awful lot that we can learn, again, from the natural world. I even talk with people about how we've talked about this on this program, about there is no other species on the planet that is required to wear clothing in the given environment in which they live. Where they live, they're suited for. You don't see polar bears on the equator, nor iguanas in the Arctic Circle. Mm-hmm. Whereas man has to build structures and has to manufacture clothing in order to protect himself from the elements and so forth. And that raises and this actually was a conversation I had with someone, that they said this raises the question of whether or not we're indigenous to this planet. And that's going off in a whole nother direction, granted.
Yeah.
But, you know, it starts to get you to wonder. But the animals that are here, they seem to have adapted in whatever term you want to use for that adapting to the environment in which they live. And when you take them out of that environment, they don't do so well. And I know that there are those who are not real happy with zoos, for example.
Right.
I've started to wonder myself. You know, I mean, granted, okay, if the zoo wasn't there, most likely I would never experience being in the presence of elephants or lions or other types of animals. But is that justification for taking them out of their environment? How would we like it?
Yeah.
How would we like it?
Yeah. If nothing else, I offer a good dose of gratitude and thanks to those individual animals that they're basically in service to mankind in terms of their education and the open, how they open, help open children's and adults' minds at the zoos. But yeah, that's a tough one.
Indeed it is. I want to thank you so much for taking so much time with us here on the program. Really enjoyed it. Have a few questions left to ask you, and I encourage people to pick up Gracious Wild at their local bookstore or on Amazon.com and so forth. Go to wildgratitude.com. I believe that's correct. I got that right?
Yep.
You can get a copy, a free copy, an e-book, if you will, of dealing with spirit animals and animal messengers. You can download that. It's kind of neat. I've actually done so, and so you'll have an opportunity to do that. Before we wrap up the program, who is Stacy Couch?
I am a mystic and a deep appreciator of life on this planet.
And what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I hope to help people validate and affirm their experiences in the natural world. So you've been sharing so many stories in this time we've had together, and I want to encourage other people to share similar stories with each other and look deeper into those stories, because there's so much meaning there and it's so much food for the soul. So I really want to do that, and I also want to let people know that the animals are there speaking to us all the time, that we all have power animals and guides that are with us, looking after us. There is hope in that way for those who are feeling a sense of despair. And there's also hope for the world that we're going to come into a better place. And I'm willing to help carry that torch and be a part of that ever-growing wave of people that are carrying that torch of hope and love and to create change in the world. So I'm very hopeful.
And who inspires you?
Wow, I could give you a list of probably about 50 people. definitely my two horses and my two cats. They're some of my biggest inspirations, and my husband as well. He's a fifth grade teacher. And if I go further out from there in terms of great mystics and great teachers, I study a lot with Carolyn Mace. I love her work and what she does. She's brilliant. And I've been spending time lately with St. Francis of Assisi and Thomas Merton and Thomas More, and just feel so fortunate that we have what originally was the printing press, right? So I get a chance to read and be in contact with the great mystics that have come before and laid the path for this kind of work, and also helped be there to guide us even when they are no longer in form. So, I feel very lucky.
Well, if you ever find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you come in studio to continue our conversation.
That would be great. I would love that, too.
Yeah. Well, Stacy, thank you again for joining us on the program and for the work that you're doing and for the book, Gracious Wild. And we encourage people to go to wildgratitude.com to check out more of what you're doing.
All right, great.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.